A.J. Frund, Alyssa Guernsey, Thomas Valva, Triana Somerville, Noah Tomlin, Arabella Parker. What do these kids have in common? They were fundamentally failed by the very people they trusted with their lives. This is Suffer the Little Children, the true crime podcast giving voices back to the victims of child abuse and shining a harsh spotlight on the parents, guardians, and caretakers who silenced them. I'm your host, Lane. During each weekly episode, I'll dive deep into a different case of child abuse murder, often including audio clips and conducting interviews with family members or other major players in the cases I cover. Calling attention to these tragic stories can lead to positive changes in the systems designed to protect children. These kids deserve to have their stories told and their voices heard. Subscribe to Suffer the Little Children on your favorite podcast platform.
True Consequences is a proud member of the Borellis Podcasters Guild.
The Oracle Network.
Look deeper.
True Consequences is a true crime and mystery podcast with stories based in New Mexico and the American Desert Southwest. I'm your host, Eric Carter Lundeen. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Season 3 of True Consequences. This is Episode 1, The Tragic Murder of Victoria Martins. This episode contains graphic content, including descriptions of domestic violence, sexual abuse, and child abuse. Listener discretion is advised. I'm so excited to be back with Season 3 of True Consequences. This show started as a passion project for me, and it has evolved into so much more. I continue to fight for justice and advocate for crime victims in our state, and your support means more than you know. When I first started this show, I did it with the singular motivation of bringing awareness to the issues with New Mexico justice. And there are a lot of issues with New Mexico justice. I especially wanted to focus on the horrendous state of child safety in New Mexico. This problem is so widespread and persistent, and I've realized something through creating this show. I realized that by not telling my story, I was doing a disservice to the cause. You see, I've said this many times, but the problem with child abuse in New Mexico has persisted for decades. And until we're willing to stand up and talk about it, nothing is going to change. We can't expect anything to change if we keep doing the same thing over and over again. And you see, I'm just not going to settle for that anymore. So I'm asking you to stand with me and stand with True Consequences against child abuse in New Mexico. We've got to put an end to this. We've got to figure out a way to deal with this because everything we've done so far as a state has done nothing to stop it from happening. Just a couple of reminders before we get started. If you want to support this show, you can go to patreon.com/trueconsequences or you can go to ko.fi/trueconsequences. I also have merch available on TeePublic. The link is available on my website. Any Justice for Jacob t-shirt or item that's sold, half of the profits from that item go to the New Mexico Coalition Against Domestic Violence. Also, don't forget to follow me on social media, on Instagram and Facebook at True Consequences Pod, and on Twitter at True Cons Pod. I've held off covering this case because of the intensity and terrible details involved, but this case has been very frustrating, not only for me, but many New Mexicans, because it seems to have gone way off course. I'm going to cover it in two parts for this season, and I'm likely going to release more in-depth looks at this case on Patreon. Today, I'm talking you through the tragic case of Victoria Martins. In part one, we're going to look at the overall details of the case. Part two is going to be an interview with an advocate named Joelle Leah, who is working to give Victoria a voice. I am Eric Carter Lundeen, and this is True Consequences. Victoria Martins was born on August 23, 2006. According to classmates, she was a very sweet and thoughtful young girl. Victoria lived in Albuquerque with her mom, Michelle Martins, and her little brother. Victoria's story is one of the worst child abuse cases in New Mexico history. Her senseless death was absolutely avoidable, and it should never have happened. She is one of the countless children that the state of New Mexico has forgotten. Her death would ignite fear and outrage in the community. And the initial details were so alarming that people were left wondering how something so grotesque, so harrowing, could happen to such a sweet young girl. Then, the entire case was at risk because of false and misleading statements made by witnesses, suspects, and even police. Like I said, it's been extremely frustrating to watch, especially when you see things like one of the primary suspects being released on his own recognizance, and the fact that that same person had no restrictions about contact with children. As we talk about this case, you're going to see why that's so frustrating for me. But let's go into some background. Michelle Martins is a single mom, and she was working really hard to take care of her kids in 2016. At least that's what it looked like. She was born in the Bronx in New York and then moved to Texas. Eventually, she landed in New Mexico. In 2016, Michelle was living in the Arroyo Villas apartment complex on Albuquerque's west side. She'd recently been hired at Smith's, which is a subsidiary of Kroger Grocery Stores. She was excited to start this new job, and according to family, she'd recently even passed a drug test, which allowed her to get the job. According to Michelle and her family, she loved her kids and worked very hard to take care of them. But the events of August 24th, 2016 would cast a shadow on Michelle, and it would send shockwaves through our community. In March of 2016, Michelle Martins called the Children, Youth, and Families Department, which is also known as CPS in other states. She was reporting that her then boyfriend had attempted to kiss her daughter, Victoria. This man in particular was accused of two cases of child abuse, and in 2012, he was accused of molesting two young family members 15 years prior, when he was just 16. In May of 2013, he abducted a 4-year-old girl from an apartment complex in Albuquerque's North Valley. This girl's mother chased him and crashed into his car. Luckily, he pushed the young girl out of his vehicle before the crash, and she was reunited safely with her mother. But here's the thing. He was never officially charged in these accusations, and it appears that there was no additional investigation into Martin's boyfriend at the time. It's not uncommon for child predators to use relationships with single parents to get close to child victims. Had the police investigated this matter, perhaps more could have been done to prevent the tragic murder of Victoria. But they didn't. Apparently, Martins met this man when they worked together at a store called Bye Bye Baby, which basically focuses specifically on baby-related items. Diapers, wipes, diaper bags, cribs, pretty much anything you need for a baby. In her interview with the police, Michelle claims that as soon as she learned that her boyfriend tried to kiss Victoria, she kicked him out of her house and broke up with him. But she changed her story multiple times and eventually claimed that her boyfriend had sexually assaulted Victoria. A spokesperson for the Albuquerque Police Department falsely claimed that APD had investigated the CYFD report about Martin's boyfriend attempting to kiss Victoria. But the truth was, they had not. Albuquerque police claimed that the spokesperson simply misspoke. An additional spokesperson claimed that they did not follow up because the report was only of an attempted kiss, which, according to APD, was not cause for alarm or further investigation. It became a big scandal and resulted in the discipline and eventual firing of that spokesperson. Children, Youth, and Families Department had been called 5 times to the Martin household prior to Victoria's murder. And it's believed that the majority of these calls were made by Michelle, though I've been unable to corroborate that. These 5 calls had resulted in no action taken. CYFD claimed that after conducting an internal audit, they feel the agency followed protocol and that they did a thorough job of investigating the 5 reports. But if this was the case, how did no one see the signs that Victoria was in danger? How was there no evidence of abuse when what eventually happened to her was so awful and so brutal? It seems unlikely that this just all happened overnight. But again, this speaks to a larger problem with child protection in New Mexico, one that I've illustrated multiple times on this show. It's important to note that prior to 2016, Michelle didn't have any kind of criminal record, and her parents claimed that she did not use drugs or drink at all. And, if you'll remember, in August, she had recently passed her pre-employment drug test with Smith's Supermarket. Okay, So this is where the story starts to turn. Michelle Martins claims that she met a man named Fabian Gonzalez on an internet dating site called Plenty of Fish. They started dating in July of 2016, and by August, Gonzalez had moved in with Michelle and the kids. Gonzalez is one of New Mexico's repeat offenders. He had been arrested and prosecuted several times in his life, and he was released and reoffending in the vicious cycle that has become the status quo in New Mexico. Fabian Gonzalez had been charged with two cases of assault against a woman and had received probation for both cases. He also has an extensive criminal record. According to NM Courts, his charges have consisted of battery against a household member, August 27, 2004, plea, not guilty, outcome, converted nolle prosequi, failed completion with a domestic violence program, March 16, 2005, plea, guilty, outcome, guilty, failed completion with a domestic violence program in February 5, 2007, plea, guilty, outcome, guilty. Inflicting great bodily harm or using a deadly weapon whereby death or great bodily harm can be inflicted, June 2012. False imprisonment, June 2012. He pled no contest to the false imprisonment. For great bodily harm, this was dismissed by the prosecutor, nolle prosequi. He was charged with battery against a household member. He pled no contest. He was found guilty. He was charged with resisting, evading, or obstructing an officer in 2012. This was dismissed by the prosecutor, nolle prosequi. He was charged with the abandonment of a child with no death or great bodily harm in 2014. He pled no contest, and then he was charged again with battery on a household member in August of 2014. He pled no contest. And finally, there was an open count of child abuse in 2014. But it's not clear what that resulted in. And for those of you who may not know, nolle prosequi is a legal term, which means a prosecutor has dropped the charges and the case is closed. There's several reasons this might happen, but here's an example of some of them. The suspect had a successful completion of a diversion program. This would be something like a domestic violence class or a parenting course. It could also be anger management, those types of things. Realizing that insufficient evidence supports the charges, finding out that a witness is unavailable, or learning that a witness is wavering in their testimony. Another example would be learning that the witness has filed a request to not prosecute. If a witness drops the charge, so will the prosecutor, in some cases. In a hearing in 2012, a probation officer warned the court that Fabian posed a threat to the community and was high risk for reoffending. So there's this offender living with Michelle and her children. He's high risk for reoffending, and he even had child abuse charges pressed against him in the past, not to mention domestic violence charges. It's been reported that Fabian had asked Michelle to hide their relationship from her parents, which to me is a huge red flag. Why wouldn't you want your girlfriend's parents to know about you unless you had something to hide? He also started frequently bringing drug users over to Michelle's apartment, and things only got stranger. And they were soon to become much, much worse. So Fabian has a cousin named Jessica Kelly. And Jessica was in jail when Fabian moved in with Michelle. She and Fabian apparently had a phone conversation while she was in jail. And when she was released on August 15th, Fabian brought her to Michelle's apartment. So let's look into Jessica Kelly. Like her cousin, she has an extensive record of criminal charges against her. In 2011, she was charged with shoplifting. She pled guilty, and she was found guilty, but her sentence was deferred. In 2011, she was charged with a failure to appear in court, she pled no contest, and she was found guilty. In 2012, she was charged with criminal sexual penetration in the second degree, aided and abetted by another. This was dismissed by the prosecutor, nolle prosequi. In September of 2012, she was charged with conspiracy to commit criminal sexual penetration in the second degree, aided and abetted by another. She was found guilty with a no contest plea. The same month and year, she was charged with kidnapping in the first degree. This was dismissed by a prosecutor, nolle prosequi. Again, 2012, charged with conspiracy to commit kidnapping in the first degree. dismissed by the prosecutor, nolle prosequi, and finally, she was charged with battery. In the same case, dismissed by the prosecutor, nolle prosequi. In her sexual assault case, she was accused of helping an inmate sexually assault a fellow inmate. And when the victim hid under the bed, Jessica grabbed her and held her so that she could be assaulted. She also kept a lookout for guards. She was eventually charged with conspiracy to commit criminal sexual penetration in the second degree, which is a Class 3 felony. She was not a registered sex offender at the time because conspiracy charges do not require registration as a sex offender in New Mexico. And I just feel like that is such a huge loophole. If you're conspiring to commit sexual assault against anybody, you're just as guilty as the person who's committing the assault, at least in my opinion. I think that's something that definitely needs to change here. And in fact, the state Senate did try to bring that to law, but it failed. Now, there are two repeat offenders in Michelle's home with her kids. As you can imagine, this is a recipe for disaster. And unfortunately, these circumstances are all culminating to a terrifying and gruesome event that would result in the loss of Victoria. It's also believed that Gonzalez had more than one girlfriend at the time. And once his cousin was released, they went to the house of one of his girlfriends and took drugs together. On August 18th, Gonzalez invited his cousin to move into Martin's apartment with them and allegedly charged her $50 for rent. There are reports that the family of Jessica Kelly and Fabian Gonzalez had a barbecue to celebrate Jessica's release from jail on August 21st, and that Gonzalez got into a fight with a woman at the party who claimed he had stolen from her, and she demanded that he leave. He refused to leave, and a physical fight broke out. Gonzalez was punched in the face and received a black eye. He continued to harass the woman by text, and he even threatened her. His internet search history showed that he was looking for guns online the night of August 21st, and it's believed that Gonzalez and his brothers were all members of a gang known as TCK. We're going to take a quick break. I'd like to thank today's sponsor, Podcorn, for sponsoring this episode. Check out sponsorship opportunities and start monetizing your podcast today by signing up at podcorn.com/podcasters. Podcorn is an easy way to monetize your podcast. For me, it was a no-brainer. You see, Podcorn makes it super easy to work with sponsors. They have a marketplace that allows you to interact with potential sponsors, which is super intuitive to use. I've been working with Podcorn for about 6 months now, and I've already had 5 different show sponsors. With Podcorn, there's no middleman, and doesn't matter how big your podcast is, I'm able to set my own rates and work directly with sponsors. The best part is, you don't lose any of the rights to your show, and Podcorn supports you the entire time. With the marketplace, you have access to brands, and Podcorn provides transparency, creative freedom, and full control of how and when you have ads in your show. Click the link in my show notes to sign up for Podcorn today and find the perfect sponsorship for you. That's podcorn.com/podcasts. August 23rd, 2016, was Victoria's 10th birthday. Throughout the day, several things had happened. The Albuquerque Journal has a very thorough timeline of events leading up to Victoria's death. Here's an excerpt. Quote, Victoria turned 10 years old and took the bus to school that morning. Gonzalez took Michelle to someone's place to get drugs around 11:40 a.m. This person warned Gonzalez and Michelle that Kelly should not be in the apartment and was acting weird. The man said that Kelly gave him an EBT card, and this is a government food benefits card. She gave it to him to use it, but said that the devil told her not to give him the PIN. Gonzalez and Michelle returned to their apartment, but then left again around 2:30 p.m. to get drinks and drugs. At 2:33, Michelle texted a woman telling her to knock on her apartment door and pretend to be her aunt and make sure that everything was okay. Michelle texted her mom and asked her to pick up Victoria from the bus stop after school at 2:36 p.m. At 2:37, Michelle's mom returned her call, but she ignored it. Gonzalez convinced Michelle that Kelly should pick up Victoria from the bus stop. Michelle was skeptical, but Gonzalez told her to trust Kelly, that it was safe to leave Victoria with her. End quote. According to court records, it seems that Michelle responded to her mom that she had figured it out. But it turns out, when Michelle texted Jessica to confirm whether or not she had picked up Victoria, Jessica did not respond. And she did not pick up Victoria. Instead, Victoria had to walk from the bus stop to a neighbor's apartment. Michelle heard from a neighbor by text that Victoria was trying to reach her. Michelle and Fabian returned home a little after 5 p.m. Fabian gave Victoria money. Accounts vary, but it's said to be between $60 and $80. And there's even an account that Michelle took Victoria into her room and explained to her what she needed to do with the money. Gonzalez also took Victoria to the convenience store that evening and bought her a soda without Michelle's permission. Michelle and Gonzalez again left Victoria alone with Jessica several times that evening. A jail recording of a phone call between Jessica and her sister, who was incarcerated at the time, caught Jessica saying that she was tweaking and hallucinating. Neighbors reported having a conversation with Jessica and Victoria that evening and stated that Jessica interrupted Victoria and then forcibly dragged her into the apartment. There are even reports that she grabbed Victoria by the hair. Late evening, August 23rd, 2016, neighbors at the Arroyo Villas apartment heard a loud disturbance at one of the units. They claimed that they heard screams coming from Martin's apartment. There were also several reports that residents had seen Jessica carrying Victoria outside around 10 p.m. Around the same time, Martin and Gonzalez returned to the apartment. Jessica was then seen bringing Victoria back upstairs. Court documents also show that Kelly claims while Martin's and Gonzalez were out looking for drugs, a man arrived at the apartment looking for Gonzalez. I'm going to read this report verbatim. Quote, after Gonzalez and Martin's left, a man appeared at apartment 808 and asked for Gonzalez. He used his street name. Evidence would show that Kelly allowed the man to enter the apartment. Kelly was aware of Gonzalez's involvement with drugs as well as his connection to criminal enterprises. Kelly was also aware that Gonzalez had been bragging about his drug activities and criminal enterprise status and had even threatened other people involved in those activities. Based on Gonzalez's known history and actions, the man's lack of connection to the apartment and the man's appearance and demeanor meant that Kelly knew or should have known that the man posed a substantial and foreseeable threat to Victoria. Despite this threat, Kelly caused or permitted the man to go into Victoria's room, where Victoria was getting ready to go to sleep. The man strangled Victoria to death, and after the murder, the man told Kelly that it was Gonzalez's fault. Kelly did not attempt to stop the man or call for help from authorities or anyone else. Kelly's conduct showed her reckless disregard for the safety and health of Victoria. But here's the thing that bothers me about this. There's a lot of things that bother me about this, but the thing that bothers me the most is that if there was this man, if he actually existed, if this actually happened, why aren't people trying to find out who this was? If there was a person responsible for Victoria's death, why have there never been any suspects named? Why is nobody looking for this person? Now, I don't know what's going on behind the scenes in the detectives' offices at APD. I get it. But I just have a hard time believing that this man, quote unquote, is not made up. I have a hard time believing that this wasn't a fabrication by Jessica to give her some sort of alibi, to help her deny her responsibility and her role in Victoria's death. The documents also explain that when Martin and Gonzalez went back to the apartment, Jessica pulled him aside and secretly told him that Victoria was murdered. The cousins agreed to work together to conceal the murder and keep Martin's away from Victoria's room. The report claims that Gonzalez kept Michelle busy by asking her to cook dinner. And this is where things get quite graphic. If you cannot handle extreme depictions, I advise that you skip forward a few minutes or so. In Victoria's bedroom, Gonzalez and Kelly then proceeded to dismember Victoria's body and remove several organs. They worked together to carry Victoria's body into the restroom and placed her in the bathtub. Kelly then went back into Victoria's room and proceeded to attempt to clean up the blood. Here's a verbatim reading of the official court documents. Quote, after cleaning the blood in Victoria's room, Kelly got a clothes iron and hit Martins with it in the forehead. A clothes iron is an object that when used as a weapon could cause death or great bodily harm. Kelly intended to injure Martins. There was a protracted on and off again struggle involving Kelly, Gonzalez, and Martins. During one interruption in the struggle, Kelly cleaned up some of Martin's blood in the kitchen. A short time later, Martins and Gonzalez left apartment 808. Kelly then set Victoria's body on fire and took down two smoke detectors in the apartment. End quote. Now I'm going to play some audio from a 911 call.
And a guy's at our door saying he got beat up pretty bad. Oh my God.
What's happening?
There was a lady that's pretty beat up.
I'm sorry?
Yeah.
Is it a male or a female that he's fighting with?
There's two. No, there's a... Who are you fighting? Oh, there's a girl in the house. I don't know, but this girl's beating really bad. There's a little girl inside the house.
How old?
How old is your daughter? 10. Oh, yeah. She's 10.
Is she awake?
I don't know. She doesn't know. If the other individuals inside her house.
Police were dispatched. Here's an excerpt from the original criminal complaint. Quote, on August 24th, 2016, at 0434 hours, officers were dispatched to 4701 Irving Boulevard Northwest, Albuquerque, New Mexico, 87114, in reference to an aggravated battery. The female caller reported a male was knocking on her door, reporting he had been hit in the head with an iron. An additional female arrived at the same apartment and reported her daughter was still inside her apartment, number 808. Additional information was later provided by this female stating someone killed her daughter. Officers were dispatched to the scene, as well as acting sergeant, who was also dispatched and arrived to assist with the call. They made contact with a male and female. The female, later identified as Michelle Martins, was bleeding from an injury to her head. The male, later identified as Fabian Gonzalez, had a black eye and a small laceration above his left eye. Fabian was wearing shorts that appeared to have blood stains on them. Fabian reported cleaning himself up prior to the officer's arrival and had removed some bloody socks. One officer said that he was informed Michelle's friend Jessica Kelly woke her by hitting her with an iron. Michelle and Fabian fled from the apartment. Fabian said he fled by jumping over the balcony and running to another apartment. Michelle reported her 10-year-old daughter was still inside apartment 808. Officers approached 808 and saw a heavyset female open the front door. When they made announcements to the female, she slammed the door shut. Officers attempted to open the front door, however, there was a chain lock preventing the door from opening. One officer made numerous announcements from the door, calling to Jessica to open the door. A female was seen jumping from the balcony of apartment 808, and she was identified as Jessica Kelly. An officer was told to detain Jessica because she was the same person he observed going into apartment 808. As one officer was making contact with Jessica outside on the east side of the apartment, the fire alarm for the apartment was set off. Officers were able to place Jessica in handcuffs and place her inside their marked unit as two other officers forced the front door of apartment 808 open and began searching for the child. Both officers noted that there was smoke filling the apartment as they searched the rooms. Inside the far north bathroom, there was a young female child, rolled partially in a blanket, not moving, on fire in the bathroom. One officer said he grabbed a blanket and was able to put the fire out. Another officer said he checked the child's neck for any sign of a pulse, but was not able to find one. An officer said he saw a large laceration to the child's chest area and that her left leg had been almost completely cut off. Rescue arrived and pronounced the child deceased. The child appeared to be missing items of clothing on her person. Upon further investigation, it was noted that the child was missing both arms, and both arms were later located in a white plastic bag in a plastic camper in the living room near the kitchen. There were bloodstains on the child's carpet in her bedroom, and it appeared that someone attempted to have tried to clean the carpet as it was wet. There was bruising around the child's neck, possible signs of strangulation. The child's panties were located inside the residence in a garbage can. The crotch was soiled and dark, possibly due to the child's blood. Fabian was advised of his Miranda rights and agreed to speak with the police. He was interviewed about this incident, and during the interview, he stated that he met Michelle on the internet on plentyoffish.com and started dating about a month ago. He stated the night before August 23, 2016, around 8 p.m., he and Michelle drove to Michelle's apartment complex and parked in front of her apartment. He stated that he saw his cousin Jessica walking down the stairs from her apartment holding Victoria in her hands. He stated that Jessica saw them sitting in Michelle's gold Buick and turned around, heading back to the apartment. He said he and Michelle walked up to the apartment and Jessica told them that Victoria was sleeping. He stated that all of them, except for Victoria, ate tacos for dinner and stated that Jessica was acting really weird, talking about Jesus. He stated around midnight that he and Michelle went to sleep and were woken around 1:40 a.m. by Michelle. He stated Michelle was holding something behind her back as she told them she had their phone. She hit him over the head with an iron. Initially, when asked if he knew what happened to Michelle's daughter, Victoria, he said he didn't know if she was okay. But later, in the interview, he stated that Jessica killed Victoria and also dismembered her by cutting off her arms and leg. He denied having any involvement with Victoria's death. As Fabian was being interviewed, Michelle was then advised of her Miranda rights. She agreed to speak with the police and was interviewed about this incident. During the interview, she also confirmed that she met Fabian on the website plentyoffish.com. She stated that Fabian's cousin Jessica had just been released from prison about 4 days ago and that she allowed her to stay with her and Fabian. She then stated last night Fabian and Jessica gave her daughter, Victoria, methamphetamine to calm her down so they could have sex with her. She stated that Fabian had sex with Victoria while Jessica put her hand over Victoria's mouth. It should be noted that Victoria was unable to leave or get up during this incident. She stated after Fabian had sex with Victoria, Fabian choked Victoria and killed her. And after killing Victoria, she stated Jessica stabbed her in the torso. She also stated that Jessica held out Victoria's arms while Fabian cut off her arms. She said Jessica put Victoria in the bathtub and then cut off Victoria's arms and put them in plastic bags. After interviewing Michelle, Jessica was contacted at UNMH Hospital. Oh yeah, she broke her leg jumping from the balcony. Upon telling her why an interview with her was needed and advising her of Miranda, she requested to speak to an attorney. The interview was concluded at that time. Based on the aforementioned facts, Fabian Gonzalez was arrested for the following charges: kidnapping, child abuse, great bodily harm or death, tampering with evidence, conspiracy to commit child abuse 2 counts, contributing to the delinquency of a minor, criminal sexual penetration of a minor under 15, and conspiracy to commit criminal sexual penetration to a minor under 15, end quote. So this is the initial report that happened shortly after Victoria's death. And as you listen to the rest of this episode and to the following episode, you're going to see how much that changed. But let's talk a little bit more about what was found. So the Office of the Medical Examiner determined the cause of death to be manual strangulation. Compression on Victoria's neck impaired blood flow to the brain, which resulted in her losing consciousness and eventually dying. DNA from an unknown male was found on Victoria's body, but there were no intoxicating substances in Victoria's bloodstream. So even though her mother claimed that she had been injected with methamphetamine, there wasn't any in her blood. Initially, Michelle Martins was interviewed and claimed that she had met men online and allowed them to sexually abuse Victoria. She claimed that she did it because she enjoyed watching. She said that she used the website Plenty of Fish to find these men and invited a number of them over to her home. Martins also claimed that the trio had injected methamphetamine into Victoria to get her to calm down. But again, the autopsy refuted that claim. She also said that she believed that the drugs were what killed Victoria, even though in her initial interview, she said she saw Fabian strangling her. She also claimed that she watched as Jessica held Victoria down while Gonzalez raped her. She said that Jessica then stabbed Victoria, and that's when she was dismembered and set on fire. Police confiscated a camcorder, iPod, as well as several mini discs from Martin's apartment. It's important to note that Victoria's little brother was with her father when all of this happened. So luckily, he was spared from all of this. Initially, the three suspects were charged with kidnapping, child abuse resulting in death, tampering with evidence, conspiracy, and contributing to the delinquency of a minor. Jessica and Fabian were also charged with criminal sexual penetration of a minor. But here's the thing. Michelle changed her story several times during the interrogation. She claimed that she watched as Jessica and Fabian assaulted Victoria, and she did nothing to stop them. But the autopsy showed that there was no meth in Victoria's bloodstream, but there was evidence of sexual abuse, including the fact that Victoria had a sexually transmitted infection. This was all according to her autopsy. Fabian also made claims during his interviews, one of which was that he raped Victoria after she was already dead. Martins also claimed that Fabian was abusing Victoria the entire month he was living with them. Like I said before, Jessica Kelly refused to talk. But eventually, it became clear that some of the initial details of the case were fabricated by Martins. The DA announced at a press briefing that despite Martins and Gonzalez's confessions, their cell phone data showed that neither of them were present in the apartment when Victoria was murdered. Jessica informed police as part of her plea deal that there was an unknown man who entered the apartment and murdered Victoria. The plea deal and other issues with the case are going to be covered in the next episode on Victoria's case. Overall, this has been one of the worst child abuse cases in New Mexico history, and it seems like justice is going to be elusive. As we know, Jessica Kelly took a plea deal. She won't be charged in Victoria's murder. It seems that people believe that there was a fourth person involved in Victoria's murder. But I just don't buy it. I feel like it's an excuse. I feel like it's a cop-out. I don't understand it. The same thing with Fabian. Because he wasn't present when Victoria died, a lot of the more serious charges were dropped. And the judge even let him out on his own recognizance. Like I said before, there's no stipulation that's preventing him from being around children. How could this happen? How could this case completely fall apart like this? Michelle was also given a plea deal. It just doesn't make sense to me. In this case, in particular, how one of the most horrific things that could have ever happened to a child in New Mexico, and the penalties just seem kind of bland. This has created a massive outrage in New Mexico. But at the same time, should we really be surprised? New Mexico always fails victims of child abuse. Stay tuned next week when I speak with Joelle Leah about the issues related to the prosecution and about what's happening with the case now. Thank you so much for listening, and stay safe, New Mexico.
Let's not talk about that.
Promise me that I'm going to go home with you guys, okay?
Nothing.
Nothing? Okay.
Nothing, okay?
No more. Just shut up. I'm going to prove to you and everybody that I didn't do nothing that was in the police said about me, okay?
Look how they're trying to make money off of the death of their grandchild, though.
I know. That's the thing, that, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Stupid. Mm-hmm. What I care about is poor Victoria. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I know. For what they did to her, called for, and I even told him too, for you know what that mother did to her for even before that.
No amount of money is worth your daughter or your son or your family member. That's when I'm going to get out, and I bet you. I bet you, and I know in my heart I'm getting out. You see how big I got? I've never been this deal.
What is the first thing we're going to do?
To do that special thing for Victoria.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Okay.
That's the first thing we're going to do.
Everybody asked me, they're like, that's your sister. What do you think? I said, anybody's capable of anything, but no, like, no. You know what Dad always used to say, like, you did the crime, you do the time, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, what I'm trying to say right now is, like, if you had any, like, I don't even want to say it over the phone, but if you had anything to do with it, man up, you know?
Yeah, I know that.
I'm doing bad, sister. I'm doing real bad. I think I lost my mind. My whole world's falling apart, you know?
I'm dead. I'm in such depression. I'm in such everything. Like, right now, I'm even down and gone. You're going to end up like me, and you're going to end up doing something stupid, and you're going to end up in here, and they're going to separate us because we're sisters.
Just...
I was out for 7 days, dude. I'm with your cousin for 4 days. I talked to you literally hours before I got arrested.
But you're on a mindset of selfishness. You're out for your own, you know, chasing that f***ing dope and money.
I know.
Saying that they're going to get arrested and stuff like that just to come in here and try and... They want to freaking kill me.
Oh, boy.
And I don't deserve any of it.
Well, I hope you're telling me the truth because it's all going to come out, Michelle. It's all going to come out.
Let it come out.
I hope you're telling me the truth. All right, watch your back in there, all right?
Yeah, I know how I was with her, Ma.
I know how you were with her. I know you were. That's why everybody's in friggin' shock.
Yeah.
Everybody's in shock. I don't know what the hell went on that night. I have no idea. Oh, shut up. I know. I just stopped myself. I can't tell you nothing because, you know, people are nosy.
Yeah.
Me off. So we gotta keep it. Hello, how are you? How's the food? What are you doing? David Bridal donated a beautiful dress. Oh my God. I was bawling my off.
Are you serious?
Yeah. It's a gown. Here I go. It's a gown and in the back it has a bow like a cross. And it comes with a tiara. It's beautiful. Hurting now, trust me. He's hurting now, your son. Trust me.
You just gotta hang in there.
Yeah.
Yep. Stay strong and hang in there.
All right, hang in there and just keep your eyes behind your head, all right?
Thanks for listening to True Consequences. Follow me on Facebook and Instagram at True Consequences Pod and on Twitter at True Cons Pod. True Consequences is listener supported. If you'd like to support this one-man show, please go to patreon.com/True Consequences. Thanks for listening and stay safe, New Mexico.